Welcome to Gaming the System. I'm out of breath because I ran up the stairs and down very fast just before we started. But apart from that, I'm Caroline. This is Alex. This is Matt. This is Jen. And I've missed you guys. I haven't seen you in ages. So I'm just going to catch up on air because, you know, that just seems easier, frankly. What have you been doing? What have you been playing? That's what I want to know. What games have you been playing since I last saw you?
Well, I'm in actually a bit of a change of pace at the minute because, well, not really actually. So I've been playing Hitman 2 for weeks and weeks and weeks, or Hitman 1 and 2, and I'm just really in a hankering for detective games. And I've got a game called The Sinking City, which is a Lovecraftian sort of Sherlock Holmesy, horrible, slithery detective story. I'm enjoying that very much. And I just bought Deathloop. And that's, it's basically, funny enough, it's basically Hitman, but with running around these shouty guns. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's what Returnal could have been, but it took itself too seriously and still is only selling itself for £70 because they're desperately trying to see if they can get us to pay £70 for games, and I'm hoping people are still not buying it. So they go, no, I'm not paying £70 for games.
Well, this afternoon my other half did put an article in front of me about Deathloop and said, you're doing your gaming thing, you need to read this, you need to understand. So I know all about it. Finger on the pulse for once. But Mystery Games, I would recommend, and I can't remember what the beginning of its name is, but the Obra Dinn. Is it the Return of the Obra Dinn or the Obra Dinn? But it's the Obra Dinn one. That is very cool. Love that. Really interesting. Jen, what have you been playing?
I have only been playing Animal Crossing. I was obsessively playing RimWorld, and then I got really really cross and depressed and then I watched your videos and I was like, oh, I'm totally doing this wrong. So I've been working really hard and sat in front of my computer all day. So in the evenings, I just haven't been wanting to do that. So I've been, playing on the TV downstairs, but this week I've been really naughty and I've just taken up my Switch up to bed with me and I'm snuggled up in bed and I've been listening to scary audiobooks whilst playing Animal Crossing, so it's kind of like balances it out for me. So that's been really fun actually, and I've started because I played a lot last year, and then I sort of had a big break, and then you got back into it, which brought me back into it, and now I'm sort of getting all into like remodeling my island and things.
Visiting your island, I was a bit worried about visiting anyone's island right when I started because I didn't want to spoil ideas. I didn't want to have like, I wanted to have my own vision. But seeing your island has made me like, okay, there's a lot more I can do with my island now. I've been playing a lot of Animal Crossing just because of this bloody turnip economy that they're forcing you into constantly. For those of you who haven't played Animal Crossing, on Sunday mornings before midday, you can buy turnips. And then the rest of the week, you've got to choose the right time to sell them at the best price. And they rot on the next Sunday if you haven't sold them.
Gosh,
it's stressful.
It's very stressful. And you can check twice a day. So you can check in the morning and check in the afternoon, and you have to debate whether or not it's worth selling them. I just need to say that I have also, since we last spoken, finished Resident Evil the Village. So I just wanted to say that. So I had done a bit of hardcore gaming, and I have actually completed a game which I feel is worthy of a little round of applause for me.
You should have some sound effects set up so we can do applause. Instead we'll just do that. Alex, what have you been playing since the last week?
I've been doing a mix of things really. I've abandoned Assassin's Creed Valhalla, you'll be shocked to learn. Amazingly enough. And I've been doing a lot of Overcooked, All You Can Eat, because it's so fun. I've been playing a detective game, L.A. Noire. I've jumped back into, because I left it for ages and ages in the middle of the murder desk, you know, when you play all the homicide cases, and finished that, and now I'm in the middle of the arson desk, which is all the cases about fire. But I just have a lot of fun running around LA, 1940s LA, and just doing really stupid things. And because the characters, I don't think they mean to be, because it's quite serious in game. But when you're just running around in the world, you can behave really in a really ridiculous way, and it's hilarious. And I can't get enough of it. It doesn't get old at all. You can just like shove people over, and all sorts of stuff. It's just so good. And then the other game I had a go at, which you may have noticed if you watched the live stream, which was Hitman 2. I had a taste of Hitman 2, so I shall continue playing that, I suspect, soon. Yes.
Excellent. LA Noir, speaking of finishing games, LA Noir, one of the few games I ever finished, actually, that's like back on the Xbox 360 a while back.
I keep forgetting how old it actually is, because it came out on PS3.
Yeah.
Also,
one of the first games where I ever recognised an actor from the game character face, because they started doing the motion. So, what's his face out of Charmed, which is not a reference. Maybe Jem gets that, but you know. he was Leo from Charmed. I was like, that's him. Game.
Anyone
so good that I could.
So good. The only one I recognised was, I think his name is Matt from Heroes. If anyone watched Heroes. Mm. The police officer who could read minds, he was in that. It was good.
Well, I, as discussed, have been mostly just playing Animal Crossing. There was a fair amount of RimWorld, which I have finished that playthrough that I have been doing my little videos of over on my other channel, because they're just not worthy of gaming the system for me to put them up on there. But I'm still voice-overing them and going back through them, and it's quite traumatic. And I think that's like enough RimWorld now for another 2 years now for me. I don't think I need to play it again for a long time. And I've gone back to Rust a fair bit, but I'm having real problems finding non-toxic servers. And it's been really problematic. It's just like there are not many solo duo servers out there anymore. And I might have to set up my own one, which is annoying because I don't want to have to do that. And finally, Valheim, which is the Viking game that I streamed, has got a big update that's come out today. I say it's a big update. Looks to me to mostly be new recipes to cook on your campfire, which is, but apparently it's the bigger. I think the thing is with the Valheim team, they didn't know they were going to be such a success. They didn't expect the game to sell. I think it was like 6 million copies in its first couple of weeks. And they were like, what? So they've had to go on a bit of a, first of all, a celebratory drunken binge. And secondly, hire a team and sort of decide what they're going to do with it. So I think that's a bit why that is. Maybe not. But I've got high hopes. I'm looking forward to getting back to
that. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah, right?
Suddenly have 6 million copies sold.
We accidentally were too successful. Oh, no. How will we cope?
Yeah, that's my plan.
So I've completely forgotten how to do this, but I'll just plow on. The thing we're talking about today, the topic we are talking about today is games in film and TV, and film, TV and game. I've got ways of circling around it, but we'll get back to it. But I want to talk about, basically, the thing that put this in my head was I started watching the TV show Dead Pixels a few months ago, which is available on Channel 4 Catch Up if you want to see that. And I was thinking about, actually, we are getting more and more of these things where there is a representation of what gaming is in TV shows, in films, rather than just in the past where there was the odd sort of video game TV crossover type thing like that. So I thought it'd be interesting to explore that. I'm going to set you some rules today, guys. We're not going to assume that people have seen anything. So if you want to talk about something, I think it would be nice if we because we're not going to judge anybody for not having been cool enough to have watched something, or or not being old enough to have watched something in some cases. We'll do everyone a little pricey of what we're talking about. So what I wanted to talk about, first of all, was things that we think they get right and things they get wrong in representation. So if you don't mind, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Dead Pixels, and then go for it. Just talk over me for the rest of the time. So Dead Pixels, for those of you who haven't seen it, depicts three people sharing a flat. They are sort of early mid-20s Londonites. Two women, one man, two of them are gamers. So one of the women is a gamer and another woman is not a gamer. The woman who's not a gamer is played by the marvellous Charlotte Ritchie, who you might know from Ghosts and Call the Midwife, who I absolutely love. I don't know the other two actors particularly from anything, but they are both sitting in separate rooms. They're sitting in their bedrooms with their PCs on back-to-back walls, which really appeals to me, playing what is essentially Elder Scrolls Online, but it's a fictional version of that game called Kingdom Scrolls, in fact, I think it is called. And what really struck me about this show was that my first thought was like, oh, great, they've got a woman gamer. They've got a woman gamer. They're depicting a woman as gaming as being a normal thing. And there's obviously jokes made with that throughout the show. There's some brilliant portrayals of the problems women have with putting on their mic in gaming and stuff and why they pretend to be different genders and various people being creepy. But then I also started to think about how they really sort of force the character of a gamer onto a woman. She's not, it's like, Jem, I think you sometimes say about, you know, we don't need to make women fit into these male spaces. We need to change the spaces to be more suitable for women. And I feel like the female character very much portrays this sort of stereotypical view of what a gamer is. So, one, have any of you seen Dead Pixels? No. Cool, that's fine. So none of you can argue with me. My view is now correct. And it's the but so what other representations of gaming did you guys want to talk about and where they get things wrong, where they get things right? Alex.
Oh, you're throwing me in there. Okay. I was just thinking to myself because a thought struck me. Has anyone seen Tron, the film Tron?
Not only have I seen Tron, I have prepared. It's all my graphics that I even have ready for today's show. Excellent.
Do you think that counts as a
yes?
As a thing to answer for this part? Yes. Okay. Well, yeah, I think from what I can remember of Tron, this is going back, so I haven't watched it in some time, but I think the gamers in there are all male, from what I recall. Yeah, it just seems to me that it is a very, it's like a very sort of nerd, it's pictured as a, like a very nerdy, niche, teenage / male thing. And it's, yeah, even the people that went to see the film were probably very, very nerdy at the time. I think I remember my parents saying they went to see it with their friends and their friends actually fell asleep in the cinema because they were so bored and not nerdy people, which is quite hilarious, really. But it was definitely, I think, some of the things it got right in terms of comparisons to actual games is that it did feel like you were in a game, because that's what the point of the film is, you're inside the game, which is something that was never really seen before, which I think was quite a groundbreaking thing. And of course, it was kind of like a like for like thing because games at the time weren't very advanced graphically either. So I think that's one of the things that they did quite well. But in terms of representation of gamers as a whole at the time, I don't think perhaps it was as spot on as it could be.
No, I have rewatched it recently, actually. One of the benefits of Plus, actually, is being able to watch that and then watch the sort of the new reboot type, the sequel, as it was. Mm. And it does still strike you. The graphics were phenomenal for the time, for how old Tron is. Mm. Like, it's 1980, something like that. but it is really impressive. And the reason I'd queued it up is in my head, it was the earliest video game movie crossover thing that I could think of, but I could be wrong. Matt, what depictions spring to mind for you?
Could you go to Jem first? I'm just trying to ready up some pictures I think will make a good point.
We'll pretend I didn't say that. So, okay. Jem, what depictions matter to you?
Well, I'm going to say Resident Evil because I finished the game. So I think the Resident Evil film is pretty, I've only seen one of them or two of them, maybe three of them.
But I think I've seen less than I actually have, it turns out.
I think the film is pretty. Yeah, I think they're all pretty basic films, and I think that the best sort of film game crossovers are where they're action packed, because then it's just this sort of full on, you know, just running around killing things and doing stuff. It doesn't have to be too involved. So so that's okay, because that's what you expect from that. But I do remember when I saw the first one, when the first one came out, I remember that I was just like, oh my gosh, it's just like the shot, just like the game. And I was just, it was just really nice to sort of see some of these creatures that had, like, you know, really scared the living daylights out of me on the screen, and actually get a feel for it sort of live action. I mean, obviously this is, you know, like nowadays when you play the games, it's almost like watching a movie anyway. The graphics are so good. So obviously, you know, when we go back to like the earlier days of Resident Evil, there was a clearer benefit to watching it in live action, I think. So for me, I just remember that one of the things that scared me the most in Resident Evil was these dogs. They have this sort of like wolfy dog things that are around every corner, and you can hear them click clacking on the tiles. So I spent quite a lot of the game actually just listening, like, can you hear them? Is that so? Yeah, you can hear the zombies, and you can hear the click clacking of the claws. And those are so, and then they had that in the film, and I just remember being like, oh yeah, so don't go around the corner. I mean, on the flip side, as was shown in the image actually that you just shared, it is yet another film where it's a woman in a skin tight one piece racing around with guns. I mean, there are some practicalities about wearing an outfit like that, I think, if you're going to be running around a lot, but I think most of us would probably prefer to be in our leggings or
yoga pants.
Yeah, or wear yoga pants, racing around, you know, doing with our hair up, you know, out of the way and just getting on with it. So I think there was definitely a lot of sexualization in that film, and which was a shame, because although there is some in the games, it's not as blatant, I think, for the main characters. Yeah. She gets skins and then it all gets very silly. So
cool. Yeah. Matt, you've got something for me to add to the stream now.
Yes, so hold on for one moment.
Ooh, no, don't. Do you not want me to do it next?
Pretend you didn't see that. So I was going to say the biggest depiction of gaming and gamers in recent memory for me is the Big Bang Theory. Don't put it up yet. I need to paint the visual picture.
Okay, I won't. I'm not pressing anything until you say, Caroline, press the button.
Okay, so one of the biggest sitcoms of the last 10 years, profoundly popular, another play on the trope of the handful of men with the attractive blonde that has been in absolutely every sitcom ever for the last 50 years. And we've got the four lovable nerds, even though some of it is very problematic. So this is what, according to, like, I think has been a general, like, portrayal of gamers, is what these people look like. The gaming, you can put it up now.
Oh, I can press it now. Right, okay.
Yes, sorry. So yay. That's what the world has seen that gamers are supposed to look like. They're nerdy losers who literally one of them can't talk to girls. They're weedy. They stay in and play LAN parties. They play Dungeons and Dragons. And that's what they look like. But I'm going to show you now the photos of what gamers can actually look like, because this is important. Stand by. That's Henry Cavill.
Yes.
Henry Cavill loves playing video games. He loves playing, I think he likes playing Warhammer, he likes playing board games, and he doesn't look like a loser nerd. He looks like Superman, because he is Superman.
I may have watched that video of him building his PC quite a few times.
I was going to mention that.
And so that's Henry Cavill. And then, anyone know who that is?
I know what things.
Maybe it's the werewolf in True Blood. I don't remember his name.
That's Joe Manganiello. He some arsehole wrote on Twitter. It was something like alpha males, real only beta males play Dungeons and Dragons. And Joe Manganiello just steps up and say, "I play Dungeons and Dragons." And as if there's anyone more alpha than Joe Manganiello, the modern alpha males, Henry Cavill and Joe Manganiello, showing that anyone can be a gamer. And there is no set like trope. That's the thing we need to move away from, which I think, Caroline, is what you were saying with Dead Pixels. You don't just go, this is what a gamer looks like. Oh, we've got to have a girl in it. We'll try and just squeeze her in. You go, okay, we'll make it something actually interesting and good. That's the point I wanted to make.
I thought we can't keep him up for too long. We'll get distracted. So, not that we're objectifying men. We don't objectify anybody on here. It's fine.
Well,
and also, I was wondering if you were going to mention Vin Diesel as well. Famously, a massive D&D nerd.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah. So there's plenty of them out there. But also, you know, some gamers look like me, Alex, and Jem as well, which is quite nice. And I think it is that thing with what annoyed me about Dead Pixels was that for the Charlotte Ritchie character is a very sort of nice, normal girl, whereas the other character, I can't remember names, I can barely remember your names half the time, but anyway, the gamer woman is, you know, very much like she might as well be a male character. It's just that she's a woman, and so they've made her into this stereotype. And I felt that was a bit of a shame because it misses out on exploring the wider things. So the other show I wanted to talk about was one that I don't have Apple TV, so we won't discuss how I watch this show. Doesn't matter. But if you do have Apple TV, I do highly recommend it, which is Mythic Quest Raven's Banquet, which is set in a game studio. I'm going to leave it up there for a second because I'm going to point out some of the people. So the main guy at the back that you might recognize from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, he's the boss of the game studio. But the main sort of creative and technical person running everything is that woman at the front with the shovel, which is quite a funny joke in there as well. The two games testers who work at the company are the two women on the right, and there's all sorts of lovely plots going on there. And the women in Mythic Quest, I never feel like they're being stereotyped into this is what a woman gamer is like. This is exactly the sort of category. I mean, there's the odd sort of like joke there, there's plays things, but it's very much, I feel they've hit the nail on the head really well. And they did a really weird one-off episode in the first series. I say weird, like really good, weird, it's never been explained. It's a brilliant sort of, I almost don't want to describe it because I don't want to spoiler it for you, but what's really important about it is it goes back to 90s gaming and it shows women designing games in the 90s. And it's like women have always been part of this industry. It is not something new that we're now just, oh, we're putting a bit of diversity in. It's like they've always been part of the industry. They've just not necessarily had the recognition that they deserve. And I think Mythic Quest has done a really good job of sort of balancing those things out and still being good luck. I was about to say LARPing fun because there is a whole LARPing episode that I just laughed about. It's also good laugh and good fun as well at the same time.
Can I add one more thing quickly?
It also makes me want to be a games tester, and I wish I could go back and tell my 18-year-old self that that is the career I need to go into. Yes, Matt.
Has anyone seen the film Gamer with Jared Butler?
No.
Oh, such a good film. Have you seen it, Jem?
Yeah, I think so. A long time ago, though. So
yeah, it's awesome, awesome. It's like cool. It's like you play Call of Duty, but they use convicts as the characters that you you control. So people buy control over characters, and then you literally control them to get through. And if you win enough matches, then your character gets to go free. And it's fantastic. But again, it really represents like what the playing can look like, even though I think watching like online mod. I'll complain about Deathloop in one way at some point about this. But yeah, it's a gaming thing. But again, there's four women in it, maybe. One of them's a child. One of them is Jared Butler's wife, and the child is his child. The woman is, of course, because you can control other people, they use it for sex, and she gets used by this horrible, gross man pretending to be a woman so that another character can come and have sex with her. And then there's two twins who all they do is get their boobs out for 3 seconds, and that's it. So, again, fun, but problematic as most things are.
Well, because, I was going to sort of go on to the sort of, like, depictions of women and minorities in some of these films. Now, Alex, we know who you like, and yeah. I've got both pictures queued up for you, right? So I've got 2002 version. Mm-hmm. And where's our modern era hero? There we go. I wanted to ask you, I suspect, but, is it definitely, the modern version's much more feminist than the old version's shit, or what do you think about the Tomb Raider films?
I think the modern version has definitely taken on board, the same lessons as the most modern Tomb Raiders. So they've, decreased the chest size, made her, physically a normal size woman, so she's quite fairly petite and sort of evenly proportioned and stuff, and obviously more self-aware. And then the old ones, I love the old ones. They're Matt said, there are problematic issues with the old Tomb Raider films and the old Tomb Raider games, but they have a special place in my heart because they're just good, corny fun. And I like them a lot. I remember seeing the first Tomb Raider when I was 11 at the cinema, and I felt quite guilty because it was a 12 certificate. I was one of those people where I was like, oh, they're going to check me out. I'm only 11. And I wore extra high sandals just to look taller when I was going in. And then it was fine. I think there were some elements I remember being uncomfortable with, like the obvious shower scene, which everyone might know about, is where Lara's been out and then she just decides to have a shower, and there's at least a minute's worth of shower scene time, and then you see her boobs at one point, because they often cut that bit out of the TV, but you do see Angelina Jolie's boobs at one point. But they do, I wanted to point out, in both the original Tomb Raider film and Cradle of Life, you've got juxtaposed the male love interest, because they had to put those in, but they are heavily sexualized as well. You've got Daniel Craig, before he was James Bond, also having a shower scene. And then Gerard Butler in the sequel Cradle of Life, just being Gerard Butler. And at one point, Lara uses sex to kind of manipulate him and get what she wants out of the situation, which was interesting. But also, there had to be that in there because it's a film and there has to be a romantic element to it. So I thought there were some parts of that where they were obviously playing up to the expectations of it being a film, and other parts they got pretty okay. There were some nice touches with the obvious things that you love about Lara, with the double pistols and the sense of supernatural elements to each of the films as well, because those were quite present in the games, and there being a villain as well, obviously, because there had to be. But there was definitely some problematic elements there. I think the modern one has a similar plot line. I mean, there was a lot of plot holes in the modern one. But, I think I actually prefer the older ones, to be honest. I'm going to put my neck out there. Go on, Matt.
I was going to say, I really enjoyed the latest one. I think Alicia Vikander's fantastic. And I like that she's this, awesome, biking. She's really cool at biking, and she does MMA, and she is an incredible physique and can actually do lots of chin-ups. Yeah. And so they're very, very more realistic. But I think I loved the original ones too. And I don't think anyone could look at Angelina Jolie. You look at Angelina Jolie in that picture, she is Lara Croft. If you were to find the perfect real life representation of Lara Croft, they capture that perfectly with her. But as you say, back then, still problematic stuff. She really owns it, but again, it does have the problematic stuff. I think the modern thing, it falls into a bit of a trap, as you say. It's like with James Bond now. You take something that 20 years ago, this was like completely fine, no problem. But if you made it today, it wouldn't roll so well. So they take that and then they sort of try and build it backwards and go, how do we take this and we'll chip away at it to sort of make it okay for now, rather than what it would need would be a sort of a, how do you reboot it without losing what the original games had to offer? And I think James Bond is going to do okay because it's been Daniel Craig for what, always been men, Daniel Craig, that same, all the same like problems with women all the way through, that's just a bit but now what I think they're going to do is they're going to make a black woman 007, and then that's how you take the James Bond feeling, and then you reboot it, and you have to change it, you have to be bold, but you have to be, in order to be bold, you need to take risks, and I don't think a lot of people don't like taking risks, especially with beloved characters.
I'm still very much on the fence when it comes to James Bond, because trying to make it glamorous and dramatic and exciting that somebody goes around killing people as a state-sponsored agent doesn't work for me. Just, I can't get on board with that as a plot. But since we are on this exact topic, GoldenEye on the N64, best ever fucking film game crossover ever. So there you go. I'm going to come to you in a second because I want you to tell us more about the show that I told Kiss Me First, that was it, which I'm curious about. But I just want to bring in Tom's comment here, which was seeing Camilla Luddington, the voice of the modern Lara in the games, speaking at a con, how people see her as aspirational. And of course, Camilla Luddington plays Dr. Jo Wilson in Grey's Anatomy. And the character, Grey's Anatomy, is just a wonderful hub of feminist positive inclusivity. And so I like to think that Camilla Luddington's bringing some of that culture with her to the games. And I like to think that's a good part of it. But yeah, Jeb, tell us about Kiss Me First, because I looked it up and I'm now curious and want to watch it.
Yeah, it's quite a dark show, because it follows a young woman who is, well, she's not even an adult, she's only 17, and she's just really sort of sad and lonely. I think her mum has recently died, so she's very isolated, and she gets involved in this online role-playing virtual reality game, and meets this sort of strange group of other equal social misfits, really, online, and there's all sorts of weirdness going on, but the way that the show runs is that you have a sort of real world storyline going on, and she does meet up with some of the people in that real world space, and then there's also this virtual world, which is very similar sort of graphics to Avatar. There was an Avatar-y feel to it anyway, and so it's nice because they're depicting the two environments. And for me, this is actually something that's extremely close to my heart, because when I was doing my A-levels a million years ago, I did theatre studies and I was awful at it. And I wrote and directed a play as part of my course, and it was awful. But the idea of it was that the idea was that it was this online offline crossover, and it's extremely difficult to portray, definitely when you are 17. And you have no access to anything except for dry ice, which is basically how I like to picture the different world. But yeah, putting my directing abilities to one side, I like that. I think it's a really interesting thing, and I think that that Kiss Me First does this quite well, actually, moves between the two worlds. It's, I mean, they have, I think, cheated a little bit because they put on the headset, and the world, that the environment that they go into is extremely, it's sort of Ready Player One kind of level of virtual reality, and obviously that's a long way off from where we are right now. So it's not quite the experience that I think any of us would recognize in the game world, because it is a very immersive experience. But it's really nice to see this sort of playing out, and the story. I don't want to give too much away, actually, but the story is about the sort of issues and risks of that crossover when something can be so real online that it's too alluring. The flip side is that I think all the characters are pretty realistically depicted. I don't think there's not kind of like extremes of like stereotypical gamers or anything like that. It very much feels to me like, you know, a bunch of sort of teenagers that you could find anywhere. So I think that's really good. And there is sort of diversity in there because there's a bit of LGBTQI stuff going on, and there's all of that. So you've got that. But I think it still leans a little bit on the side of like, oh, it's a bit dangerous, you know, these kids getting too involved in their game and getting too sucked in. Yeah. You can't trust anyone you meet online. They've all got nefarious sort of undertones going on, and they're all going to try and con you and ruin your life. So there's an element of that that goes on. But I think, you know, it's an ongoing series, so, you know, it will progress. But yeah, I would definitely recommend watching it. We found that it was too heavy to watch too quickly. So, you know, because it is quite, just heavy, just because it's one of those things that just has quite a sort of depressing undertone. So it's a little bit Black Mirror.
Well, I was, because I'm glad you mentioned Ready Player One, which I also had queued up to bring up. So Ready Player One, I think I have more issues with it than most people do. I think most people think it's a brilliant film with flawless characters. And I should love it because it is very much, I think, aimed at my top end of the millennial generation. I'm allowed to call myself a millennial because I was born in 1982. So I'm just in there. But I think, you know, it's all pop culture references, and obviously the whole setting being this sort of Gary Gygax type fake character, and how you've got to follow the clues, and it's all about the sort of the nerdy D&D boys, the nerdy computer gamer boys, the nerdy pop culture reference boys, and it being about that. And everyone's like, yeah, but they've got this cool kick-ass woman in it. First of all, we've got the she's all that problem with it, which is the whole, oh, she's hideous because she has a slight mark on her face. It's like, yeah, she's ostensibly beautiful. We can see that. It's not even a thing. I do love Lena Waithe in it, who's just one, I'm a huge fan, and she does brilliant work. But the big problem I have with it, and it's a big problem with going back to all the things that I loved in the 90s and the early 2000s, which is, and this is like more of a therapy session thing for me, but I feel like all the boyfriends I had as a teenager and at university, it was because film and TV and games had taught me that absolute losers who have no prospects in life, who have no interest in doing anything other than sitting on their sofa, secretly are going to save the world one day and are actually the amazing hero. And all they need is a nice woman to pick them up, sort them out, give them a good shake, and they'll be fine. And it's a woman's job to do that, to care for them and to feed them and to support them on the way, so that guy sitting on the sofa can end up saving the world. And the thing, and that's my big problem with Ready Player One, is it just repeats that. And I know it's based on an old book, so it's all like the thing, but it's that sort of narrative that I think is actually really dangerous to young women. You see it with teachers quite often as well. We used to have a thing in the sixth form where if there was a lad who was falling behind on his A-levels, like, oh, we need to sort of set him up with a nice girlfriend, as if somehow it was the woman's responsibility to start sorting his life out for him and getting him on track and stuff like that. And again, we see it in Big Bang Theory, which I'm glad you brought up, Matt, of this, you know, idea that, you know, yeah, sure, of course you should go out with someone because they have a good heart and are kind, but you also should go out with someone who's going to actually take active things towards their life without you having to do it for them and look after them all the time. You're not their mother. And I think there's a lot, as I say, this is various varying levels of emotional therapy for me here, but I think I found it really hard to enjoy Ready Player One, although the graphics are amazing, there's so many references in there that I absolutely love, because it's yet again Bill and Ted, Wayne's World, all of those things, Airheads, all of these stories over and over again were telling us that really those guys, all they need is a nice woman to help them out and they'll be fine, and girls, you should be out there helping them. Anyway, sorry, that was a bit of a rant, but I had to get that. That's mainly the reason we've done this whole podcast show episode. Is I Ready Player One rant, but I left it for 40 minutes before I brought it up. So, you know.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on it, Caroline. I had exactly the same reaction to it. I think partly I was just cross because I was like, this is the book I should have written. This is my life. But obviously not that, not all the stuff. And also, but I do think it's also worth pointing out that he is more attractive in the film than in the book as well. They improved him too, because the character is not supposed to be all that either. So I think it just goes to show, doesn't it, how we, you know, when we turn these things into live action, we just want everyone to look pretty, and you know, we can't understand why somebody would find somebody attractive when they don't have the classic good looks. And you know, and I think that's really problematic, actually.
So I was hoping there was one film that all four of us have seen, and I realized should have checked this before we went on air, but Wreck-It Ralph. Yes. Have we all, Matt?
Yay.
Oh, Matt.
Wow.
Oh, your soul. It's so good for your soul. Wreck-It Ralph is one of the most heartwarming, beautiful films ever.
I don't like heartwarming films. They always start with tragedy.
You're the character down in the bottom right there. You see that woman down in the bottom right there? You're that character. Yeah. She's resisting heartwarming and having her heart warmed. And she's like the Halo character from like games like COD and Halo running around. It's brilliant. I have not got a bad word to say about Wreck-It Ralph, but it does have a lot of women in it. It does have a lot of women in very different roles. So I did wonder if Alex or Jem, you had anything to say about Wreck-It Ralph.
I just really liked it. I liked how, this is going slightly off topic, but I like how many Easter eggs there were in it. And I think that's the thing that's reflected in a lot of games is the Easter eggs that you find is led. There's just so many. You can watch Wreck-It Ralph about 3 times and you still spot something new the next time you watched it, you know. And that's just a nice sort of throwback to games and the secrets that you can find in games. That was my only point I can think, and otherwise it's just a great film, go watch it.
If there's one film that I'm going to make you watch, Matt, it's Wreck-It Ralph. And Jem, any problem with the cupcake princesses running, doing the motor cars? I think they're feminist icons. I don't think there is a problem with them.
I bought the Princess Peach outfit in Animal Crossing, so you know, I'm not in a position to make any comments about that.
Which I've already ranted about, costs more than the Mario and the Luigi costumes, so it's the pink tag in place.
I know it's pretty shocking, actually.
Right, so the last thing I wanted to talk about in terms of like just an area I don't feel we've touched on so much is The Other Way Around, films that have been turned into game. We mentioned Resident Evil, but films that have been turned into games, which historically is considered quite an unsuccessful area. So, this is where I figure not everyone's old enough, but apparently the E.T. game on the Atari was considered the worst game ever and ended up in a landfill in Nevada, which was excavated in 2014, and they found a load of Atari games from E.T., which, you know, it wasn't that bad.
E.T.
But, you know, I think there's been some good ones, some bad ones. Matt, any that you particularly thought of?
So, I started off thinking it's extremely rare that there are... So this is film and TV to games.
Yes.
Yeah. Very... Stand by. No, I've got it switched around. I just want to quickly mention about TV shows of game.
Chuck it in. Go on then.
Yeah, games.
Give Alex and Gem a second to think before I put them on the spot.
And it struck me that the main ones for TV are, of course, anime stuff. So Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Beyblade. Anyone play Beyblade?
No, but I'm aware it exists.
Oh, they're so cool. The spinning tops that, like, you can control. You go, and it goes. Yeah, great fun. On to my examples of film and TV to games. There's the Alien. There have been loads of Alien games. The Alien Isolation is fantastic. Female protagonist has nothing, and it's just part of the world. And then there's the Matrix Path of Neo, which was literally like being in the Matrix. It's the coolest thing ever. And then there was a game based on Mad Max, which had no business being any good at all, but it was brilliant. So they do quite well. But again, there's always the same like representative issues, because if something is rare, then 90%, 95% of it is going to be like traditional white male protagonist. It's only when you start expanding out, like with indie games, there are a million indie games, so you get loads and loads and loads of variety. But where there is limited examples, there is very little diversity.
And I think that's, you know, just as we've often said, if it's a problem in one bit of the media, it's a problem in all bits of the media.
Yeah.
Alex, film to game.
Well, this is an interesting question for me, because almost the entirety of my childhood gaming catalogue is games of films. So you've got things like, very early on in the PC, I had things like Bug's Life the game, Toy Story 2 the game, and then moving on to PlayStation, I've got literally all of the Harry Potters, Lord of the Rings the game, The Hobbit the game, what else? There was some others. Simpsons, Hit and Run, a really good one. There was one. Pirates of the Caribbean, even. And then we get on to later on, where all the Legos, Lego Star Wars, Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Harry Potter. A lot of my PS2 gaming catalogue are games of films, of books, I suppose. So it's just this never-ending train of different forms of the same thing, which are all great. Although I must admit, like, you had the first three Harry Potter games, which were very much games in themselves. You had the characters made up to look slightly different than the film characters. And then from the fourth game onwards, so Goblet of Fire, they made the characters look like the actors in the films. And I think from then on, the game quality declined sharply.
Really? I thought Order of the Phoenix was one of the best.
Although games. That one was good, yeah.
That to me felt like a sort of like GTA type exploring game. Like, you basically, it was, I know obviously it wasn't like GTA, but it was this big open world game. Where
they stepped up the Hogwarts's.
I don't think there are any hookers at Hogwarts.
That's true. Well, you never know, no. But I think the fourth game was a bit of a weird one, definitely. But I think I liked the first three because there were so many things that you wouldn't find in the books and the films, because they're solely game things and they were just part of that game world. And
Quidditch World Cup.
There was separate things. Quidditch World Cup, that is one of mine. Oh, yeah.
So best. Good. Incredible so game.
Oh, I love it. But yeah, no, pretty much most of my childhood gaming catalogue are games that come from films and or books. I know it well.
You just reminded me of the South Park games as well. And they are flawless. I love South Park.
Jen, what were you
thinking? I'm really struggling with this one, actually. Because I generally avoid them, because I tend to feel like if something was a film and they made a computer game, they're just trying to cash in and it's just going to be rubbish, because most computer games take a long time to make, and it just always feels like it's going to be too. So it's been interesting actually hearing about the Harry Potter ones, for example, because I had just avoided them because I have this prejudice against them. But I would say I have played the Walking Dead games, some of those, which are awesome. Ones. Yeah, and they're just very like still images and things like that. It's not, you know, sort of walking around trying to, eat people or whatever. And they're really intense and really emotional, and they're all sort of like make these decisions. And because it's done like a sort of serialized, and I remember being really like having to make decisions, and then get really upset when some of the characters died, and I was just like, oh my god, I can't believe that happened. So I got properly engaged with it, so I think those were really good actually, and I think that's an example of but I don't know, I mean, I'm assuming the TV series came first, but well, I'm only making that assumption.
I believe there were graphic novels first, actually, and
I think
that the games take their cue from the graphic novels very much. And I was thinking about this, that there is like, and I wonder if there is a bit of like not generational, but I do think like very much definitely in the late 80s, early 90s, games that came from films were awful cash in shy. I remember remember Ghostbusters 2 game that I had on my own.
Yeah.
And it was just shit. It was really crap. Whereas obviously now, like, I mean, I believe that this one's, I haven't actually played it, but I believe this one's been considered really successful and really enjoyable. But I think with games coming from films, and I think you're right, Jem, when you're making a game, you should be making the game. You shouldn't be trying to, right, I would take scene one of the film and make it into scene one of the game, scene two. And I think that's one of the things actually the Lego games did really well. Mm. I love them, Alex. I've really enjoyed them. I think they've taken the odd cutscene and the odd setting, but they've done their own thing with them, and they haven't felt too restricted by them. And I think they've been really good. And it also occurred to me as well, when it takes the inspiration from the setting rather than the specific film. So obviously Batman being the really sort of fake, you all know I love the Batman games. I think they're amazing. I think mainly because I think they've got the best melee combat system out of any game I've ever played. And I think that those, again, by not going, right, we've got to accurately remake this film scene for scene, we're going to take inspiration from this, from that, you can make all sorts of cool things. The only one we haven't mentioned that I wanted to mention, and, you know, basically this has just been a Caroline wanted to talk about film and TV podcast, so I'm going to do it, which is Jurassic Park. So... there is.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're going to play. Yeah.
Well, Jurassic World Evolution 2's on its way out. And I did play Jurassic World Evolution and I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it a lot, but it is nowhere near as good as the PlayStation 2 game Jurassic Park Operation Genesis, which was the best game ever. In all of, like, I spend a lot of time playing theme park games, building, you know, RimWorld, things where I get to build a little world and manage it and run it. That's what I like in a video game. I like to create my own little world and micromanage it and see what happens. And we can all discuss what that says about my psychology later. But Operation Genesis was really, really good for that. You could create a perfect Jurassic Park with all the things you wanted. You could run it really well, or you could take down the fences and let the raptors eat everybody. You could have so much fun with it. But because of licensing issues, it can't get reissued. Basically, like, the company that bought the license now no longer exists and never sold it to anybody else. And so that game is just gone forever. And it makes me sad. It really, really upsets me that I'm never going to get to play it. And Jurassic World Evolution is all right, but it's not as good. So, yeah, that was my other rant that I had to get in. Right. Has anybody got anything else they want to say on the matter of video games crossing over between video and film and TV? Jem!
I wanted to give a mention to The Guild with Felicia Day, because I think that as a representative example of gamers, I actually think that was awesome. And it was out when I was heavily into World of Warcraft, and it was clearly parodying gamers of those kind of games, and it's really nice because you've got you know there's quite a diverse representation of players. There's lots of different skin colors, there's lots of different ages, there's lots of different backgrounds. So you've got sort of stay-at-home mum, you've got your teenage like boy, you've got your middle-aged man, you've got, you know, ditzy Felicia, and you know, and you've got Tinkerbell, who's just awesome and doesn't want to be, you know, just very like distancing herself, and Zabu, who's just so funny and always trying to get in with all the girls, really. And it was so much fun. It was just a really quick little sort of web thing, and well worth looking up if you haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I think it will age well.
Generally, anything involving Felicia Day is a good thing to look up. Generally,
I love
Matt.
Yeah, very quickly, you're saying games that restrict themselves to the source material aren't often as good. There are two things that break that rule. There is the PS1 Hercules game, which I think really was nappies, and it was amazing. And then the other one is the Lord of the Rings Two Towers and Return of the King PS2 games, because they literally took scenes and recreated them, and just awesome, absolutely awesome.
No, and you're right. I remember playing that particular, not the Hercules game, just to be clear, the Lord of the Ring game. And I remember like the scene where you're fighting the big old ogre-y trolley thing in the Mines of Moria. That, like, I still remember that this many years later as being like an amazing moment in gaming, and like one of those ones where it's like it's really stuck with me as being very good. And I'm glad we brought that up as well, because Daniel did ask, does Lord of the Rings count? Yes, it counts, Daniel. Definitely. Absolutely. And that's the thing, is like there is this sort of, and I think that the narrative started with the magnificent, classic, brilliant movie of Street Fighter 2.
Wow.
Look at those outfits.
Is that Kylie?
Wow. Yeah, that's Kylie.
Oh my gosh.
Kylie, Jean-Claude Van Damme, your woman from ER.
Yeah.
And the guy on the left's quite famous as well. I can't remember his name now, though, but at all. But you know,
it's like a bisexual heaven. The two guys and the two girls.
But you know, that was 1994, and you know, sort of if you think about it, video games then had been around for about 12, 15 years, really sort of start. And it's those, I think some of those early video game movies gave a really bad name to video game movies. I don't want to say it because I love it, but the Super Mario Brothers movie as well, what's his name from Who Framed Roger Rabbit and John Leguizamo? I can remember John Leguizamo's name, but I can't remember the guy who played Mario. And again, I think it was quite a fun film, but they gave it a really bad name when actually, as you say, there's been some really good crossovers later on. And I think going the other way, there's been good crossovers. So I think it's just more the early doors, the media didn't get it right. They didn't do these crossovers well. And we shouldn't judge all film games or game films from now on, forever and ever more. Raul Julia, that's the guy from who played Gomez in The Addams Family. Thank you, Tom. Most appreciated. Yes, him as Bison there. So I've been stalling because I haven't got a wild card question because I forgot that it's been so
I've got
long since I've been here.
So
I forgot to do a wild card question. But Matt, have you got a spare one?
I do.
Can you lend me a wild card question? Go for it. I will answer it then.
Okay. Gaming phenomena that make you feel old. Okay. So my one, I'll go first, give you a little bit of time to think about it. Roblox. What the fuck is Roblox?
You're not old enough. That's the problem, Matt. If you're as old as me, then you have a child who can tell you.
Yeah, exactly. That's just literally just said that. There's like the age point where you get up to the child's having, you have a, like an auxiliary knowledge because you need to know enough to stop them spending all your money on skins and blocks. And I just, it's that thing, like it's like the Fortnite for... If Fortnite is like something that I understand, it is to me what Fortnite is to like someone in their 50s. And I just go, no, nothing. Understand nothing.
It's amusing you say that because the first thought I had was amiibo. I was like, I don't really know what that is, but no, I think yeah. the same thing. But I tell you what, and this is relevant to Dead Pixels, is bloody well paying for little boxes, like little loot boxes and stuff like that when you don't have to, when they're purely cosmetic. I refuse to ever give any game any money for something that is purely cosmetic or just nonsense. I'm just... apart from Rust, but that's because you can make money on the Rust market by selling them, and I have actually made quite a bit. We sold our Christmas lights for 70 quid a few weeks ago, so that's me. Alex, what makes you feel old in gaming?
I was thinking back to the very start of my life as a gamer, as it were. I think comparing that to now, one of the things is putting a disc in and then having to wait while it downloads more. Like, you should be able to play it right away and not have to download, and then also keep downloading updates all the time.
Sorry. Yes! Every time I open Elder Scrolls Online.
In the old days, you had a disc.
Yeah, you just pop in, and off you go. Yeah.
Not dead.
Yeah.
They got it wrong.
Then you just get, I mean, there were patches, but like, that's a different thing. But yeah, no. No
Daniel,
more downloads.
It's disgusting that somebody paid 70 quid for our Rust Christmas lights, but they did, so, you know. What makes you feel old in gaming?
Well, like I say, I think you get to a point where, you know, if you have a small person, then they kind of keep you in touch with reality. And I think that's the joy of having kids. But I think one of the things that did make me feel I have reached a limit, a point in my life that I will not be able to go back from, was when I sat down and played one of the latest Sonic games. And this isn't even that recently. This is like going back probably about 9 years. And I just remember sitting down and I was like, nope, my reactions are not quick enough anymore. And I'd loved Sonic, but I just couldn't keep up with it. It was just way too fast. And I was just like, I have no idea what's going on. This is all happening too quickly. I am too old for this. So I just stepped away from those kind of games.
Yeah, I like that. Oscar always says that, though, about Sonic at any age. He's always found it too fast. It's like, I can't go fast. Right, well, thank you for all chatting with me today. And thank you for everybody in the chat for your help as well. I've noticed we've got some captions ready to go now. So you can watch us every Thursday at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. Hey, podcast and bonus rounds, let's play. Nice setting up, Matt. Thank you for that. and do make sure that you subscribe for some gaming fairness and goodness. We do have lots of videos on our YouTube channel, more frankly than I ever thought possible. So I'm very impressed. And, you know, follow us on Twitter. And like, share, subscribe, Matt. Is that what I have to say?
Correct.
Anything else?
Mm-hmm. No, I think you've covered it.
Nice. Hold cool. Right. Well, we've been Gaming the System and we will see you next Thursday. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Gaming the System. If you want to support us, you can donate to us through our PayPal by sending it to wearegamingthesystem@gmail.com. If you want to send us a one-off donation. If you want to donate to us monthly, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/gamingthesystem. Until next time, bye-bye.